The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, the NFL did their best yesterday in trying to make their fan base forget the past 2 months. Giant flags were draped across the field during the national anthem. Players that had previously sat or kneeled were now standing beside the two members of the 49ers. And pregame tributes were kicking off all over the country. Officially, the NFL hasn't changed their policy during the national anthem, and the commissioner has made that very clear in a statement on Saturday. He said, and I quote, "There has been no policy change in the current policy regarding the national anthem. The agenda will be a continuation of how we make progress on important social issues that players have vocalized," end quote. So the NFL has been locked into a PR battle for over 2 months. How do they reconcile with the players who the country is thinking, you know, you're disrespecting the entire country, but somehow remain receptive to their employees, the players? The solution was to let their national anthem and flag protests continue, but sneak in a little patriotic imagery wherever possible. And yesterday, Veterans Day displays were the culmination. But they've been working on this now for weeks. Has anybody noticed the camouflage gear that the players and the coaches have been wearing on the sidelines? That is just mysteriously increased as the NFL ratings were going down and calls for boycotts were increased. One Facebook page called the boycott the NFL, had over 250,000 fans vowing to watch something else on Veterans Day. So are you fooled by any of this? Do you care about any of this? Here's a news flash to the NFL. You can't defecate all over the flag every other day leading up to Veterans Day and then all of a sudden pretend, oh, no, we're no. You can't fix this with a parade and theatrics or camouflage clothing. You want to fix the problem for real. You have to change the policy. You have to require your employees to show a little respect. They can protest their country all they want, just not during working hours. Encourage them to use their fame at the local levels. Go to police departments. Engage in actual conversations. That could do some good. And the premise wouldn't be crapping all over the men and women that have died to keep them safe. Men and women who have died to ensure that they could make millions of dollars chasing an oval-shaped pigskin ball around a field after they've knelt and taken a knee in disrespect. Now, I want to make it clear, I don't think the players actually intended to insult veterans and the country when they began this protest. I just don't think any of them actually thought it all the way through. There's many ways to get the point across. Most football fans are just sick and tired of this. They want to watch football again without all the politics. Yesterday's tribute was a good start, I guess. It seemed a little hollow and meaningless. But if a change in policy doesn't follow, I don't think the NFL is going to fool anyone.
It's Monday, November 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So let's... Hello. I'm glad you're here. Let's start with Roy Moore. And then we'll get to Sulu, who is just... Is this getting out of control? Is this getting out of control? We have a guest in the third hour... That is warning. Is she a liberal, Stu? Do you know?
I think she's a libertarian, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's like, look, this is good to make sure that we don't have sexual harassment, but are we Weinsteining everybody and everything? Is this getting out of control? And so we'll talk to her, but let's bring you up to speed on what has happened over the weekend with Roy Moore. Roy Moore, if you read, and please don't just read or listen to people's commentary on original sources. Please go back and read the original source. Then you can disagree with it. But please read the original story. So many people have not read the Washington Post story on Roy Moore, and so they don't necessarily know what they're talking about. There are two parts of this story. One is all legal, but makes you squeamish, that he was dating 16, 17, and 18-year-olds when he was in his 30s. There's nothing illegal about that. And all of the 16, 17, and 18-year-old, the girls, I think all three of them, have their mother in the story, too?
I don't know that all three did, but that was definitely part of one or two of them.
I mean, they
approved it. One of them was cheering kind of the relationship on, like, Roy Moore's a catch, go for it.
Yeah.
Good job.
Right. Weird. Yeah. And the other one was like, hey, you're robbing the cradle here, stay away from my girl. And so he did. It's distasteful. Where this becomes a problem is with Roy Moore and the 14-year-old. Now, Hannity did an interview with him on Friday, and Hannity's in all kinds of trouble because they say he was defending Roy Moore.
Which is ridiculous, by the way. Hannity, a lot of people expected him to have Roy Moore on and kind of just toss some softballs. I listened to the interview. He didn't. He brought up every single uncomfortable part of that, and he was praised widely by not only people on the right who like or who don't like Moore, but also journalists and people from across the ideological spectrum. He really actually pushed him really hard on it, I thought, in many places, and brought up all these really uncomfortable moments in the interview, and didn't let him just get away with quick denials. I mean, he kept going back to the well over and over again. I thought he did a good job with it.
So here is here's Roy Moore. There's two clips. Here's clip one.
I don't know Ms. Corpman from anybody. I never talked to her. Never
That's
had any contact with her. Allegations of sexual misconduct with her are completely false. I believe they're politically motivated. I believe they're brought only to stop a very successful campaign, and that's what they're doing. I've never known this woman or anything with regard to the other girls. You understand this is 40 years ago, and after my return from the military, I dated a lot of young ladies. I do recognize, however, the names of two of these young ladies, Debbie Wesson and Gloria Thacker, which they have a maiden, that's their maiden name.
So this is an interesting part of this, in that he full out straight denies
the
anything with a 14-year-old.
You denies even saying that he's even ever talked to her.
Or had any idea who she was.
Right. So if there's any photographic evidence, if there's anybody who saw them together, this is going to fall apart for him quickly, because he's denying even knowing the first girl.
Yeah, he set up a very easy, you'd think,
yes,
hurdle for people to
clear. Unless he's telling the truth.
Right, unless he's telling the truth. Right, like if he actually did these things, he's saying he never even knew her, so that's a much easier claim to prove than they hooked up or went on dates.
Correct.
So we'll see if anything comes out on that. As of right now, I don't believe that it has. The other part of this is, when he's talking about the 16, 17, and 18-year-olds, you get the sense that, yeah, it's probably happened. Now, again, there's nothing illegal about the 16, 17, and 18-year-olds, and that's a very important point. The age, the age of consent is there for a reason. You might agree with it, you might disagree with it, but it makes it so he is okay to do these things, particularly at this time. It wasn't highly questioned. Now, the age of consent hasn't changed in Alabama. It's still 16.
So here's the problem. How old was Billy Joel when he married? Remember, Dan had a real problem.
Dan Andros,
yes. Dan Andros was one of our producers and writers, and he was like, he could not stop for like 2 years. He couldn't stop. If he's listening now, he's going to call in.
Oh, totally.
He could not get past the age difference between Billy Joel and now his wife.
Mm-hmm.
How old was she when they met?
Let's see. October 20, 2004, he met his wife. And that's his third wife, who was aged 23. He was 55.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the age difference there.
Yeah.
55, 23. What do you have in common, really? I mean, she wasn't even alive when his hits came out. So I mean, it's like it's a little crazy. So I find, you know, it distasteful when, you know, some, you know, 50-year-old guy is dating a 20-year-old. Okay, he's 30, she's 17. What's the difference other than we're starting to think of those people as our daughters? But yeah. Let's talk to the fashion industry that has models that are 12, 13, 14 years old. Guys are looking at them, you know, all glammed up. What is the difference? I mean, we have a real problem here in America on what's right and what's wrong.
Yeah, on one side, you're getting from the left that Roy Moore can't date an 18-year-old when he's 32. On the other side, they're defending a culture which allows pornography. You're allowed to be in porn at 18 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, I think they're both creepy, right?
Yeah.
But the idea here is you have laws, and that's why I think that there's this part of the story, and this has happened in several of these stories, where you have a headline marquee really bad claim from an accuser, where you say this person did this horrible, horrible, horrible thing. And then we're going to support that story with evidence of him doing somewhat similar things that actually aren't illegal at all. And that's what's happening with Moore here. What they're saying is, because you'll keep hearing this claim. And again, like, I look at the Moore story and think he probably did do these things. So I don't want to say that I'm not defending him here, but I'm worried about this process in that, like, you look at, you have this one story of him having sex with a 14 or almost, you know, touching a 14-year-old sexually. And then there are three stories of him dating 16, 17, and 18-year-olds that didn't progress beyond kissing. And what the idea here is, look at this really bad claim. Here are three kind of similar claims that should make you believe the first claim. They keep saying there's 30 interviews that they had here that they did about this. Well, they did 30 interviews total, not about the 14-year-old. And again, I'm not saying that that's not creepy and weird for a 32-year-old to hit on an 18-year-old or a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old.
I think it's I think it's beyond creepy, but it is legal. And, you know, if you're looking at Alabama in the 1970s, I mean, I think in the 1960s, it was lucky that the age of consent wasn't 4. I mean, you know, it was a different world, man. But you know, this is legal as opposed to molestation and rape of a minor, a pedophilia. Where is that line? I mean, I think a 32-year-old going for a 16-year-old is approaching that line. But as society, we don't say that. That's the age of consent.
Yeah. And again, you can make up your mind and say, you know what? To me, it's really disturbing. And because of that, I won't vote for Roy Moore. That's a totally fair thing for you to make a distinction on yourself. And I, you know, you listen to these interview clips and he pretty much admits that something went on. He knew these people. He doesn't call it dates, but whatever. You could tell that, you know, his excuses for the 16, 17, 18-year-old are at very best inconsistent.
Okay.
But I mean, you can make that determination. It's a whole other line, though, when you're talking about an illegal activity.
They're
sexual
now calling
contact.
Him a pedophile.
Right. Which is,
if he was doing this with a 14-year-old, yes. But that's different than the 16, 17, and 18-year-old. I want to play one more clip from Roy, and then we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back. And I want to ask you, what is the difference between something that has already happened that everyone was okay with? And I remember saying, this is really creepy, but everyone was okay with on the left. We have to be consistent here. We'll go to that coming up. First, here's the audio. Well, one last piece from Roy Moore.
Do you remember ever going on a date with her? She said that you asked her out on the first of several dates, but nothing progressed beyond kissing.
I don't remember specific dates. No, I do not. And I don't remember if it was that time or later, but I do not remember that. No.
But you know her, but you never dated her ever. Is that what you're saying?
Know her, but I don't remember going out on dates. I knew her as a friend. If we did go out on dates, then we did, but I do not remember that. Hmm?
What about Gloria Thacker Deason? Says she was an 18-year-old cheerleader when you began taking her on dates that included bottles of Matus Rosé wine. She's 18 at the time. The Alabama drinking age at the time is 19. Did that ever happen?
No, because in this county, it's a dry county. We never would have had liquor if I would never. And I believe this, she said that she believed she was underage. And she, as I recall, she was 19 or older. And that just never happened. I'd never provided alcohol, beer, or intoxicating liquors to a minor. That would be against the law, against anything I would have ever done.
Shopping online comes with a million pluses. I've been doing this for the holidays already. I've bought a bunch of gifts for the holidays online, and I absolutely love it. There are some tips, however, to keep your identity and financial information safe because shopping online comes with threats. Use a secure internet connection rather than a hotspot. Make sure you do that. Shop on sites with secure payment methods like credit cards or gift cards. Create strong passwords. Be wary of deals that are too good to be true. And avoid all the phony shopping apps. Identity fraud costs Americans $16 billion just last year. If you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can be stolen in ways you may not be able to detect. Thieves could sell your information on the dark web and get an online payday loan in your name. LifeLock uses proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if they detect your information has been stolen, they're going to send you an alert. Now, nobody can protect or monitor all transactions at all businesses, and nobody can stop all identity theft. But LifeLock is the best in the business. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's 10% off your LifeLock membership if you use the promo code Beck. Do this before you do any holiday shopping. Visit LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck and save 10% now. LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I hate talking about this stuff. I just hate talking about this stuff. Because I don't know who's guilty, who's innocent. You just don't know. Most people, 99% of people, have not even read the original story. So they're hearing it third hand. I feel uncomfortable because I don't want to defend people, but I also don't want to convict people. Roy Moore, is it a story if someone dates an 18-year-old girl and they're in their 30s?
It's not even a news story, right? I mean, it might be a little bit, it may be for the gossip pages, maybe yeah. TMZ picks it up, yeah. Right? But it's not even, if a celebrity does it, it's not even a news story.
16, that's a story.
Probably is, though, yeah. More just a moral question than a legal one in most states.
And not even a moral one, an icky factor. I guess it is a moral question. 17. Does anybody remember Shoshana Lowenstein? Remember that name? The 17-year-old that Jerry Seinfeld dated when he was Jerry Seinfeld?
39 at the time?
Yeah, he was 39. She was 17. When they broke up, she was, Julia Louis-Dreyfus said in an interview in New York Magazine, she said, it didn't make me cringe. I mean, when he was in that relationship, it was a happy one for him. And she's terribly nice person. So I'm in favor of it. Come on, who cares? There's nothing wrong with it. I thought it was great. Anyway, they're not dating anymore. So that was the response from Hollywood with a 17-year-old.
Different. I would say that was different than their response here.
Different. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess the left would say, well, Jerry Seinfeld, he's not running for anything. We just have to decide as a society. I just can't take this anymore. I can't take the sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong from the left or the right. I can't take it. We have to be consistent. Is it right or is it wrong? If it's If it's wrong, then the law needs to be changed. But so far, the law says you can date 16, 17, 18. I'm not letting a 30-year-old guy date my 16, 17-year-old
no.
daughter. At 18, there's nothing I can do about it, but I'm warning her there's something wrong with that dude. But that discussion is different than what he is allegedly had done to the 14-year-old and, quote, dating her. He denies it. Time will reveal.
Back. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I spoke to a friend of Roy Moore's this weekend, and I said, what do you make of this? And their response was, I've never heard it, but I'm not surprised by it, to the 16-year-old, 16, 17, 18. And I said, really? It's not creepy? And I said, yeah. They said, yeah, I think it is. But they said, it doesn't surprise me. He's arrogant. He has always liked younger women. Now, that means something different, you know, when you're 30 than when you're 70. But I said, and the 14-year-old, they said, I find that extraordinarily difficult to believe. They said 16, 17, 18, maybe because the culture was so different in Alabama. And I don't want to defend this because I'm really creeped out by it. I would be outraged if a 30 something was trying to date my 16-year-old daughter. I would be ringing the alarm bells from here to kingdom come. There's something creepy about that. However, it's legal. And he said he's a legalistic guy, and he will play completely in the lines of where it is legal.
And up to that line.
And up to that line, but never past that line. And if you listen to the Hannity interview, you kind of hear that when he's talking about, you know, did you go out to, and then he said, did you, well, I don't really remember it as a date, et cetera, et cetera. Well, did you ply her with alcohol? Did you buy her alcohol? She was 17 or 18. He said, first of all, I remember her being 19, but I have never bought anyone underage a drink because it is 19 years old. I would never have done that. And he was really strong and clear on that.
You could tell the things where he's very strong on, and then you could tell the things he's maybe not so strong.
Did I date a 16-year-old? I might have. I don't remember.
It wouldn't be consistent with my behavior generally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's a strange way to answer that.
But when you asked about alcohol, absolutely not.
Would have never done that.
When you ask him about 14-year-old, absolutely not. Would have never done that. So that seems consistent, although I'm still skeeved by it, but it's consistent.
Yeah. This is a completely imperfect analogy here, but it's like if you're talking about whether you're a legal driver or not, and you say, I'm going to go 55 miles per hour, that's the speed limit, and someone goes 52 miles an hour, and you say, hey, what are you doing? You're going 52. Well, the speed limit's 55. Yeah, but that's really close to the speed limit. You can't go 52. That's too close. Well, the speed limit is there to limit your speed to 55 miles an hour. Obviously, we know in this case, a lot of people will go 56, 57, 60, 65, 70. That's not okay when it comes to the whole sexual part here.
When it comes to speed limit, the speed limit is people will argue, you know, well, I was going 58 and they stopped me. Well, okay. There's that 3 mile, you know, an hour kind of thing. You're like,
I think it's, you know, 10 you go, to me.
Yeah.
Or
you
maybe
go,
14.
you go 5, 10 miles over the limit. Then everybody's very clear. Well, you were nuts. You were going 10 miles over. You deserve to be pulled over. It sucks. I do it all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
This is more like the speed limit in Montana or Wyoming. I don't know if it's still like this, but it used to have, they didn't have a speed limit. They had a minimum speed, and the minimum speed would be like 40 miles an hour. Okay. You could not drive 40 miles an hour on the road because you'd be a hazard because everybody else would be going 120. And you come up with this 40 mile an hour car and you'd be like, you didn't even see it. And you're a hazard. So this is more like the minimum speed. You go 39 miles an hour or 40, you are going to be stopped.
Yeah, this is a hard cap.
This is a hard cap. You go, and there's no leeway at all. Yeah. You go 15 and the limit is 16, no leeway.
No leeway. So that is completely true.
But here's the problem. If the legal limit is 16, where she can say, yes, 16, 15 and 14 are illegal, and that immediately puts you into the pedophile category, okay? It's like if you're the minimum speed is 40 and you're going 39, all of a sudden you're an axe murderer.
Right.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Not the way
it's like you're
works,
totally fine at 41.
Yeah.
But at 39, you're an axe murderer.
You don't want to cut these close if you can help it, right?
Yeah. That's fair. It's a really fine line. You just, to me, you don't even want to get close to it. You just don't get close to that line.
If this story, however, was Roy Moore at 32, dated a 16, 17, and 18-year-old that did not progress past kissing. Okay. Let's just say this is the only story.
And talk to their moms.
And now it's 40 years later, we have no other evidence whatsoever of any creepy behavior. He married someone, has been married the entire time.
This would not be a story.
This is not even a news story, right?
No.
It's almost like a weird aside from his history. Like, if he's running for president, it certainly does get brought up. It becomes a news story at that point. But it's more of a
dog on the roof of the car. I mean, a little more than
that. Yes, but I know what you mean. Like, it's a past. It's probably not a big story. The story is the 14-year-old, period. The other stories are being used as advancing the narrative that he's a creepy guy with teenagers, which seems like it may, even by his own interview, seems like it might have been true at the time. However, that is not a huge news story if he didn't break the law and he went through four decades of showing no other signs of this behavior. So I think... honestly, I think this is one story, and like probably the appropriate way to look back and read that Washington Post story is to delete all references for the other three girls.
Because
and look
it's
at
legal.
Just the 14-year-old. Look at just that story by itself, and is that enough to convince you that he did these things? Because I think everybody in this audience, or at least 90% of this audience, would say, if we came out with real evidence and we knew that it was true, he admitted he was dating 14-year-olds, I don't want him anywhere near the Senate. No. I don't want him anywhere near anything. I mean, it's hard.
If he's dating 16, 17-year-olds, I have a real problem with it. I have a real problem with it. 18-year-olds, not so much. 16, definitely. 17, yeah. I've got a problem.
Odd.
And it's just that it's, I don't, it's like, that is just, that is so far out of the realm of normal for me.
When you're in your 30s.
Yeah. That's not good. It's just not good.
not a good practice.
And so I that makes me nervous. And it would make me pause. The 14-year-old is, I mean, that's pedophile stuff. And it's, again, it's, 40 is the speed limit. 39 is you're an axe murderer. Don't go 39.
Never go 39.
Let me take you to a piece of audio. George Takei, who is he is Sulu, and I've disagreed with almost everything George Takei has ever said or written. He's the guy who last week said, in the United Federation of Planets, we had universal health care. That was a TV show, man. He's extraordinarily liberal and kind of a nasty guy, I think. However, when this story came out about him, what it was is I guess it was 30 years ago. 20 or 30 years ago, he apparently took this young model that he met in a bar to his house. And then the charge is he gave him some sort of drink that drugged him. When he woke up, George was pulling down his pants and being, you know, wildly inappropriate. And the guy wakes up. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, just relax, man. And he's like, no. He pulls his pants up. And George is like, well, fine. You've missed the greatest night of your life. So the model said, hey, this happened. And, you know, George Takei did this to me. George came out on Twitter and he was big time, you know, offended. This is heartbreaking to me that anyone would say that because of the way I stand on these issues, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of felt bad for him. I thought, I wonder if this is the first guy to be taken down who hasn't done it. And then this surfaces. Listen to George Takei recently on the Howard Stern show talking about Harvey Weinstein.
The irony is we have a man in the White House who talked about grabbing... There is an irony about all of this, is there not, George?
Well, it's a repetition, you know, because...
All your years involved with... You never hassled anybody or grabbed their... Yeah. Did you ever grab anyone by the... there, Will?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Well, they were different times.
Or something?
You never sexually harassed any... Have you?
Oh, my goodness. You've got such a beautiful...
It's some people that are kind of skittish,
right?
Or maybe afraid, and you're trying to persuade. But you know,
do we need to call the police?
What is he saying, Howard?
What are you saying, George? In other words, there were times, but you never held a job over someone if they didn't.
No, I never did that.
Oh,
no,
I see.
No. What did you? Yeah, that's what this is all about.
Work situations, though.
It's not about sex. It's about power.
Right.
I see.
It's about power.
But you didn't do this grabbing at work.
Oh, no. It wasn't at work.
Oh, good.
It was either in my home.
Oh, okay.
They came to my home.
Well, that was an open invitation.
Doesn't change anything at all. It is the charge that he's now denying and saying he's so offended by that somebody... The charge is he brought him home. The guy was interested. And the guy wasn't interested. He drug him. He was grabbing him in places at his home.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you're now vehemently denying that and saying that that's hurtful to even say. This was 2 months ago. You just said this on Howard Stern.
Yeah. Before that accusation came out,
right,
by the way.
And can you imagine anybody saying, oh, well, I mean, I'll have a girl over to the house, you know, and I'll grab her. You know, if she's a little shy, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's obviously ridiculous. A couple extra points on this, too. First of all, how good is Howard Stern at this stuff? He is
the best.
He is so good.
He'll make you say things that you just don't even, it's coming out of your mouth and you're like, what the hell am I doing telling Howard Stern this?
I have no idea. He is the
ultimate interviewer.
He is the best.
Yep.
And in addition to that, it is a little bit of probably an unfair standard to go back and revisit every Howard Stern interview that a celebrity has given. It is a performance environment at some level. And I think you're right in that he's kind of it is sort of a confessional, but it's like you go back and they try to do this with Donald Trump, right? Like they went back and they looked at every Donald Trump interview and it's like he said some untoward things, but he was on the Howard Stern show.
Disagree in this. Howard just makes it comfortable for you to say, obscene things.
Yes.
You know, but I know, you know, being on the Howard Stern show, there are things that I said that I was like, what am I saying?
Yeah, but you're even guarded.
Yeah, but think of this. If George Takei is really saying what he said over the weekend, I am a long-term defender. I don't believe in any of this stuff. I am on the forefront of the fight. You don't say that on Howard Stern. Because it's against everything that he would believe. That's not a performance.
Yeah.
He's saying, no, I'm against if you're going to stop somebody having a job. But, I mean, you know, look, if I want to have sex and I think that they're a little shy, sure. Well, no, George, no. I mean, I think that was a real moment. And that's the real problem with going on Howard Stern is he gets you into those real moments. Your mortgage rate depends on a lot of factors. The global economy, the loan that you choose, how many points you pay, other variables that can add cost to the property type, whether or not it's your primary residence, et cetera, et cetera. This is why you need to, as a home buyer, seek out the mortgage pre-approval and the guidance from people who are on your side before you make an offer on a home. If you're a veteran, if you haven't used your VA benefits, with interest rates this low, now is the time to get a new home or to refinance. A great way to get started is to talk to the salary-based mortgage experts at American Financing. At American Financing, it's really important that they are salary-based. They work for you. They don't work for the banks or the people that are trying to sell you the loan. Once you understand the difference between, I hope the bank gives me this loan, and the bank is selling me this loan, everything changes. Call American Financing now at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. They work for you. 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Some good news we'll get into here in a second, but I wanted to share with you over the weekend. Mercury One received news that two more young women, both in their early 20s, were recovered and reunited with their families. That makes the 93rd successful rescue of a captive ISIS sex slave by Mercury One. 93. I don't know anybody else that's even doing this. We're going to be announcing some really exciting news soon, but we sure could use your support. Mercury One is having its annual fundraiser for just all the stuff that keeps the lights on and keeps the lawyers paid and everything else. MercuryOne.org/M1Ball. You can buy a raffle to win a brand new truck. We have all kinds of things. You can come to the ball this, I think it's this Saturday night. But please help support us. MercuryOne.org/M1Ball.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, I'm concerned about Google and YouTube because Google is becoming people's news source. They've just hired 1,000 reporters and journalists. And this isn't necessarily good because they're starting to control everything. YouTube is owned by Google, and it really needs to get its priorities straight. And we need to keep an eye on this. The company is finally taking steps to block the late Anwar al-Awlaki's videos that preach jihad against Americans. They have received complaints for over a decade, but YouTube is taking this major recruitment tool for terrorists and getting rid of it, which is a good thing. But why are they now doing it? Why now? Facebook, Twitter, and Google, which is YouTube's parent company, got called into the principal's office last week on Capitol Hill, where they were reprimanded for allowing Russia to exploit their services to mess with the U.S. election. But the problem of jihadist videos on YouTube has been around much longer. This jihad propaganda influenced the terrorists who attacked Fort Hood, the Boston Marathon, San Bernardino, Orlando, and many of the attacks in Europe. 6 years after al-Awlaki was killed in a U.S. drone strike in Yemen, his videos remain the top English language jihadist recruitment tool. A few weeks ago, a search turned up 70,000 results on YouTube. 70,000 videos. Now it's only 18,600 videos. And most of them supposedly are just news reports and commentary about him. no longer his rants about killing Americans. YouTube is using its video fingerprinting technology to find and block Al-Awlaki's videos. This could be a major turning point in policy because YouTube and other social media companies have usually argued that they're just neutral platforms and no responsibility at all for what anybody posts. Well, okay, but are you consistent? For a technology company, YouTube was seriously slow to get to this point. They made their first public commitment to block videos like Al-Awlaki's in 2010, and yet even his famous 12-minute call to jihad sermon was available on YouTube until 2016. Now, here's why I say they have to get their priorities right. YouTube restricted several Prager University videos that informed viewers about Islamic extremism, as if they contained controversial views. Ironically, YouTube is now blocking Al-Awlaki's jihadist messages, the very kind of extremism that Prager University's video exposed. It is just another example of how the left trips on its own shoelaces every single day.
It's Monday, November 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So comedian Sarah Silverman, who's an outspoken opponent of, I think, everything, at least everything that is conservative, says that she considered stockpiling food and weapons last November because of Donald Trump. Now listen to this.
When it was finally official and Trump had won, I felt something I'd never felt before, which was this overwhelming survival-based fear. You know, I had the sudden urge to buy a gun and stockpile water and weapons and canned goods. And in an instant, I basically became a liberal doomsday prepper. And for the first time, I felt an actual kinship to the far-right militia person who, you know, thought Obama would end the world. But I realized it's that feeling of fear that makes us the same. You know, we are, all of us, both paralyzed and motivated by fear. We fear the unknown. And that's why Trump's campaign was so effective. He took our fears and our rage, and he gave us a place to put it all. And that place was each other. And when we're divided, we're easily controlled, right? So the challenge for all of us is to resist divisiveness and try to see ourselves in each other just as best we can.
Okay, so I think this is a really good thing. It's a good first step. But will she go as far and say, and so I've reflected on what perhaps we have done on our side, and, you know, placing the fear of that's just the way white people will do ya. Did she reflect on that? Because I agree with her. However, it doesn't work if you're only going to single out the other side. You have to single out your side.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've said things similar to what she's saying there.
Yes.
And
I've said right after the election, I said, look, we have an opportunity because they, for the first time, feel as though the entire country and our civilization could slide off the cliff. Where they thought that was insane before, they now know how fragile things are, and they are afraid of the same thing you were afraid of for the opposite reason.
And my instinct hearing that, knowing Sarah Silverman, and what she said over the past few years, is to dismiss it because, well, I mean, are you even... It's so inconsistent to where she has been and the things she'd said publicly about politics recently. But I mean, A, I should resist that instinct, right? If she's changed, you know, if she's decided she did things wrong in the past, great. But you're right. You have to take that additional step. People dismissed you when you said things like that.
But you took the additional step
to say, look, I've done things that I don't like in the middle of this. You take responsibility for whatever you can find that you feel that you may have done wrong.
Yeah. And you have to do
that. And
that's
part of it.
You have to do that before you do the other side.
Yeah.
You have to say, look, I'm going to take on my own side. I want to take on me before I even take on my own side. I will take on me. What am I responsible for? How did I miss it? What did I do? And quite honestly, I think be generous on the give yourself an extra helping of, you know, I made mistakes.
Yeah. Like, think of the border thing for a minute. If the left came to you and said, they're always saying, well, we need to let these people who are illegals become legals, become citizens, become, you know, you have to give them passes on their illegal activity from before. And if they came to you, not and just said it, but actually secured the border and actually went through and there were no new illegal immigrants coming in and they were arresting the ones that tried and they were very, like, they actually took steps on their own. I don't know if I'd be for it, but at least you'd consider it, right?
Yeah, I would be willing to say, okay, we're not going to cause more problems by doing this. Because we have, and I would need something physical because I wouldn't believe that the next guy's coming in right. And he's not says going to, I mean, if you build a wall, the only reason why I want a wall is because I don't believe that the presidents will be consistent from one to the next. And so if you actually secured our nation and you actually took it seriously, then I would yeah. seriously consider that.
And if they said,
but not until.
Look, this was our fault. We are the ones that were really light on border security. That's why these people are here. We realize now it's a problem. But, you know, as everyone will admit, there are people here that seemingly have lasted multiple decades and haven't been committing mm-hmm. additional mm-hmm. crimes. Maybe they're okay. Let's talk about those people.
Yep, I'd be there at the table.
Especially if you take responsibility for the problem.
Yes.
It was our fault because we didn't allow you yes. to have border security because we kept saying you were racists.
Yes.
If they came to you with that sort of pitch, at least you'd consider it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think most Americans would. Mm-hmm. It's just, it requires both sides to own it. And none of them are going to own it. So here's a story. Late June, President Trump hosted a group of Native American tribal leaders at the White House and urged them to, quote, just do it and extract whatever they want from the land they control. The exchange turned out to be an unusually vivid window into almost kingly power that Donald Trump sees himself as holding, which he has begun describing with increasing bluntness. This scene was recounted by a source in the room and confirmed by another at the White House. The White House has not disputed this story. The chiefs explained to Trump that there were regulatory barriers preventing them from getting at their own energy. Trump said, but it's me. The government's different now. Obama's done and we're doing things differently here. There was a pause in the room and the tribal leaders looked at each other. Chief, Trump continued, addressing one of the tribal leaders. What are they going to do? Once you get it out of the ground, are they going to make you put it back in there? I mean, once it's out of the ground, it can't get back in there. You just got to do it. I'm telling you, Chief, you just got to do it. The tribal leaders looked at back at one of the White House officials in the room. Perhaps somebody from the White House counsel's office could answer. Can we just do that? The official equivocated, saying the administration is making progress and has a plan to roll back various regulations. Trump interjected again. Guys, I feel like you're not hearing me right now. We've got to just do it. I feel like we have no other choice. Countries are doing it. China's not asking questions about all this stuff. They're just doing it. Guys, just do it. Okay, so this is what the left fears, and this is what the right fears. The right fears somebody who is going to say, just take these rights away. Just do it. Just, I know we can't do it. Just do it. I'm here. It's different now. No, there are laws. Now, the left is afraid of a president who will just tell the Indian chiefs or somebody else, just do it. No. Where we're supposed to come together is not on the man or the party, but the principle. There is a law. The president is not a king. You don't just do it. You don't pass it to find out what's inside it. You don't lie to the American people to sell stuff. And you don't just do it through executive order or just because you say so. We're a nation of laws, not of men. And the idea that we have to arm ourselves against an out-of-control government, because that's what she's saying. Now, all of a sudden, I understand guns. Well, I could say back to Sarah, well, wait a minute, Sarah. Are you going to fight the tanks? Are you going to fight the missiles? Are you going to fight the drones? Because that's what they always say. Yeah, if I have to. If it's a fascistic government, yes. If it's a totalitarian government, yes. If it's a religious totalitarian government, yes. If it's an atheist totalitarian government, yes. If it's a constitutional government based on this constitution, no. No, I'm not, because I have nothing to fear from that government. But we are not that government, and we are not moving in the direction that strengthens that government. We are moving away from that government. And this is where the left and the right should be able to come together. I don't want to regulate you. Don't you regulate me. Another great sleep last night with Casper. Casper Mattress has outdone themselves. Tanya and I were one of the first to have the new Wave mattress. We had it before it even went on the market, and they asked for our opinion. And quite honestly, I didn't like it for the first few nights. We kept our mattress in the entryway. We were just white trash. We just kept our other mattress in the entryway. Because if it wasn't good, I wasn't going to sleep on it. And Casper sent this to us. It's, 3 years of data feedback research and sleep science and everything else. And it is designed for people who have pain in their shoulders or in their hips or in their knees. If you have extra pain in your back, this has it's shaped like a wave. That's why it's called the Wave mattress. And it's extra support, but it's shaped like your body, shaped like a wave. So it helps you sleep and helps you recover from pain. You got to have good sleep to be able to restore your body. Casper Mattress, it is a complete breakthrough in sleep. And I didn't like it for the first few nights. I love it now. Try it in your own home for 100 nights. Risk-free, free shipping, and returns. I told you in the first commercial that I did for this, I'm not sure if I like it. I think I said that for about 3-4 days. I love this. You have to try it for 100 nights. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and return it for free. Go to Casper.com, use the promo code Beck. You can save $75 on your purchase. Casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So who is going to unite us? Who is out on the horizon on either side that is going to change the direction? If you look at the Democrats, first of all, Congress, this is the oldest Congress in the history of Congress. There, we've never had a median age this old. And it's amazing because the way technology is changing, the way the world is changing, the ones who can change it and fix things are not the ones in their 70s. But nobody in their 20s and 30s wants to go to Congress. Nobody wants to go. No, what? You never want to do that. The people who can actually change things want nothing to do with either party. And they certainly don't want to go to Washington. And you look at what Saturday Night Live did this weekend. Do we have the Democratic commercial where they were mocking the Democrats and the new Democrat? Here it is.
And we know that what Americans really care about is jobs. jobs like smuggling immigrants across the border and converting Confederate monuments into statues of prominent lesbian poets.
And we're really going to listen to people if they don't say what's politically correct. Like these comics out there who think it's okay to make jokes about concentration camps. That guy should rot in hell.
The Dems are back. And we won't stop now because we need another path for our country.
Another vision for America. Another chance for me, Hillary Rodham Clinton. Just one more chance. And maybe one more chance after that.
I thought she was dead.
It was brutal, and they hit it. And today on NBC, Joe Biden has been doing the Today Show and the Megyn Kelly Show and everything, and they are actually looking at him as he could be the guy in 2020.
He wants it bad. There was a big Politico story that came out last week. Biden sees one Democrat who can beat Trump in 2020. Joe Biden. Well, okay. They do. I think they see him as the only real hope.
He's going to be 80. 79, 80?
Yeah.
I mean...
What's Trump going to be, though? Trump's going to be...
The world is changing. We need the innovators. These guys are... None of them are innovating. None of them understand the world that is coming our way. None of them. Can we get somebody who's an innovator? Can we get somebody who even understands the world of today?
Well, Joe Biden took Amtrak quite a few times.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty. It's pretty big.
And that's
relevant.
I mean, and that is his idea of being cutting edge too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Amtrak.
Mm-hmm.
Amtrak. Do you remember when he was fighting on that? That's the future. Amtrak is the future.
Because you don't want something that can. Very easily with different changes in locations and preferences of a community. You want to just go to the same place every time. And especially like, you know, because a train, it lands at a big train station that automatically the area around gets terrible. So then you're just sending everyone to the worst area of town over and over again.
You want to talk about the, you know, the LA dig or the, you know, the Hyperloop. Okay. Amtrak is not the future.
Well, this Amtrak goes like 20 miles an hour faster than the last Amtrak.
You do.
But I mean, Biden said one of the reasons he didn't run is he was worried about the Clinton sort of attack machine, that he didn't want to go through that with his family after the death of his son. He didn't go through that because they'll go anywhere on Biden. And it's so true. It's totally true. And he was right. Although I think he would have handily beaten Hillary Clinton.
Oh yeah,
handily.
I think so too.
Because I mean, he is at least as much everything you could say about Biden. Because Biden and Clinton's policies are both terrible. Though I think you could argue Biden's are a hair better than Clinton's, maybe in certain areas. But he's at least funny
because he's a buffoon.
Well, yeah.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. M1, Mercury 1, this last weekend, they approved 17 rescues. And I can't give you the details of those. I can tell you that two have been successfully rescued over the weekend. We are talking about two more young women. These two that were rescued over the weekend were both in their 20s. They are ISIS sex slaves. They are literally being traded on the open market. We are hopefully going to announce something, I think this week, perhaps at the M1 ball, a new partnership and a very aggressive goal for saving these Christians in the Middle East. And I think we are running out of time. In fact, I know we are. Mercury One now has, with these two over the weekend, we have now funded 93 successful rescues of captive ISIS slaves, which is just remarkable. And I believe you will be remembered in the Book of Life for what you have done. 7,000 people now have been moved out of the area. Christians that were marked for death, they have been moved out of the region into other countries. No other organization has done that that I know of. That's more than some countries have done. This audience alone has done that. And we are really grateful. There are more opportunities now to grab these slaves, but we need your help. We'll be talking about how we can, how you can help raise money to rescue these when we unveil a plan here in the next few days. Hopefully, we've had some problems because of the Middle East. We've been having some problems that have been kind of holding us back. But as soon as I get the green light, we are going to take on ISIS and the slave trade in remarkable, literally miraculous ways. But we need your help. So we have every year we do something that is called the M1 Ball and auction, and we sell raffle tickets so you can win a brand new GMC truck. It's a great truck. The raffle tickets are $100. I don't know how much it is to go to the ball, maybe $100 a seat or $150 a seat. We're going to be there. Aaron Watson is going to be performing live. Chuck Norris is going to be there. We would love to have you in attendance. You can get either the raffle tickets, and you have a pretty good shot of winning this truck. You don't have to be present to win. You can buy the raffle tickets online at mercuryone.org/M1Ball. Also, you can buy the tickets there. You can just donate to the general fund. This is just to pay the expenses for the attorneys and all of the stuff that keep the lights on. So when I go on the air the rest of the year and I can say, hey, every dime goes, this we try to do, and we try to sell you something or do something that is fun that you would enjoy participating in or give you a chance to win a new truck. And that way we kind of earn the money that it takes to run the office itself. You can also go online at mercuryone.org/M1Ball and look at the auction site. There's a couple of things on the auction site that are really nice that have just, you know, just gone on. There is an AR. Yes. Yes. The charity that is selling an AR online. it is what? Next minimum bid is $1,600. It's a beautiful AR. But there's a couple of things on there that you might like. Also, I'm going to be adding probably today or tomorrow the unfinished pictures. I painted the heroes of the defeat of communism this weekend. Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, and Pope John Paul. And I don't know if they're going to sell them together or separately, but you'll be able to see the pictures there. And we'll post them on glenbeck.com, a link to the auction if you want to buy one of those. Done by me, so, you know, don't hold your breath for something spectacular.
Wow, I can't wait to bid.
No, it's, actually, I finished the Pope, and the Pope is, I mean, I looked at that and I was like, I kind of want to keep that. I really like that one. It's really, really good. The Pope is really good.
You oddly have talent in the artistic realm.
Yeah.
Which is, maybe you should have gone into that business.
I often think that. Yeah. I thought that this weekend. Anyway, so please help us out and join us. And I will tell you that we're also having a strange armadillo race at the ball. It's not a fancy one this year. And Jeffy is still ahead in the armadillo race.
This is very disturbing.
Yeah. People can bet on whose armadillo is going to win.
I would say it's more of supporting a particular person's armadillo.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Like, you're picking the person you want to support, and Jeffy is beating everybody in the company. And this is obviously disturbing, especially in 2017. You know, I mean, that is not, it's not something.
It's not right.
We are not happy about
it. Yeah, it's not right. It's not right. How far ahead
he's
is
like
he?
He's like double everybody else.
That's not right.
So you should go and you should donate to Stu.
No, you should go and donate to the Glenn Armadillo.
Glenn Armadillo is just going to, he's just going to cry and preach to you all the time. Don't ignore that.
If
armadillo.
I win, somebody who has bet on me, will win the trophy because I don't want the damn trophy.
You broke the trophy on the air.
Well,
last
I didn't
week.
Mean to break the trophy, but now that it's broken, I doubly don't want the trophy. Mm-hmm. So somebody will win the broken armadillo trophy. It might as well be you. Or you can go and look at my crappy art. I mean, the choices are endless here.
Perhaps you could also focus on the saving the people from ISIS. Maybe
that would be a really good one. That's a really good one. So join us for the M1 Ball. It happens this Saturday night here in Dallas. You don't have to be present to win. Just check it out, please, and help us along with the M1 Ball. It is mercury1.org/M, the number one ball.
I'm glad you brought up the world of art here, Glenn, because I believe I've stumbled onto a controversy. I think we need to look back at certain things we've done in our lives and reexamine them.
Yes, yes.
I was looking at the Louis C.K. situation, and there was a time, right, where, you know, obviously there was a sexual assault and people were horrified by that. And then we started talking more about what happens in the workplace. What if a man uses a sexual relationship as a reason to promote or to demote someone, right? And that became something we were sensitive about, you know, years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And things have changed now to the point of where Louis C.K.'s accusations there's no accusation of
forced
illegal
anything.
Behavior.
Yeah.
And there's no accusation of necessarily Louis C.K. doing anything to stop these women from advancing in their career.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking getting out the door.
Yeah, well, right. Or leave it. Yeah, getting out of the situation. Mm-hmm. And it's a standard that I don't think was thought of as sexual harassment until, I guess, now, which is and the crazy thing is, I think Louis C.K. agrees with this. This isn't just his statement. These stories are true. At the time, I said to myself what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my junk without asking first, which is also true. But what I learned later in life, too late, is that when you have power over another person, asking them to look at your junk isn't a question. It's a predicament for them. The power I had over these women is that they admired me, and I wielded that power irresponsibly. So now, if there's admiration between two people, you're not allowed to ask them for sexual encounters. And then even when they agree, you're the one at fault because later on they might decide that they didn't agree. It's a difficult standard, I think. And I understand that, like,
or you can learn the lesson that I think most people learn it. You know, you can ask somebody who admires you, and then you can do whatever it is you two agreed on, and then they just kind of lose respect for you.
Right. Well, I think regret over sexual intimacy is so built into our culture.
I think it is. It's kind of like, wow, I admired you, and that was. Misplaced.
I mean, and look, not even Louis C.K. is defending Louis C.K. But if you look at that from his perspective, what his motivations were, he's doubting, right? But into him, every one of these instances started with the woman agreeing to participate in at some level to his word. And, you know, that is something that I think is, I don't think that's been considered sexual harassment until very recently, if not like a couple of hours ago. So, with this new world we live in, I happened to be listening to the radio earlier this morning, and I flipped on 80s on 8 on Sirius XM. Now, this is a station, of course, that plays all 80s hits. And, you know, I flip around. This is my childhood growing up. And I remember a very controversial song at the time by George Michael called I Want Your Sex. Now, I remember this song being controversial because he said the word sex. I mean, I was, I don't know, 10 at the time. That's what was controversial to me about it. Looking back at because I listened to the song this morning, listen to some of these lyrics and tell me how this
really
would play today.
You really don't want to.
No, listen to this.
All right.
Because now it's about coercion, right? You're trying to, if you are persistent in asking someone about sex, many of these studies say that that's either sexual coercion, assault, or rape. Right, like you can't ask multiple times. Some of these college studies have asked questions like this.
I don't want to stop you from because
this
am
is important.
I am strangely looking forward to hearing these lyrics. But can we stop here and just look at what George Takei said on the Howard Stern show?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what he said. Can you have that, Sarah? Play this real quick. This is wrong. He doesn't know it. But this is my view of coercion. Okay. Listen.
the irony is we have a man in the White House who talked about grabbing There is an irony about all of this, is there not, George?
Well, it's a repetition, you know, because...
All your years involved with you never hassled anybody or grabbed their Yeah. Did you ever grab anyone by the their will?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Well, they were different times.
Or something?
You never sexually harassed any Have you?
Oh, my goodness. You've got such a beautiful
It's some people that are kind of skittish.
Hmm. Right.
Or maybe
right.
Afraid. And you're trying to persuade.
Okay, stop.
But, you know.
Stop. Now listen to that. Now listen to that. You're trying to persuade. Did you give that benefit of the doubt to Donald Trump?
No.
Because he might, of course not, but he might have thought, well, I mean, you think he doesn't think he's the catch of all catches?
He does.
That's he just thinks you might be afraid or intimidated by him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, because he's a celebrity and obviously all women want it from him and a celebrity. So what is the difference? He has his point of view. George Takei has his point of view. You don't grab people. They're hesitant. Then you don't move forward. You don't move forward. When you move forward, that's harassment. Not asking somebody. When you don't let them out, you won't leave them alone, or you force yourself on them or grab them to persuade them, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
Yes.
So George Michael, listen, tell me this does not sound like a threat to you. Especially think about the world of today. Tell me this doesn't sound like a threat. I've waited so long, baby, now that we're friends. Every man's got his patience, and here's where mine ends.
Oh, wow.
Holy crap.
Oh, wow.
I want your sex. Then it's playing on my mind. It's dancing on my soul. It's taken so much time, so why don't you just let me go? Wait, what? Just like what? Sit back and like let it happen? Come on. There's been a delay in the amount of time since I originally asked.
I'm
just let
guy.
It happen. Come on.
I'm
now.
A guy. I need it.
It's interesting. I'd really like to try. Oh, I'd really love to know. When you tell me you're going to regret it, then I tell you that I love you and you still say no. He's very upset. She's saying she's going to regret it? Then hold on. I don't need no Bible. Just look into my eyes. I've waited so long, baby, out in the cold, but I can't take much more, girl. I'm losing control. Right? Then it just gets into this weird. His arguments are great for this. Look, it's natural. It's chemical. It's logical. It's habitual. I guess it would potentially form a habit, so we should do it. But most of all, and I love that this is like, it's like Dr. Seuss. Sex is something that we should do. Sex is something for me and you. Sex is natural. Sex is good. Not everybody does it, but everybody should. This is a song.
Not in a box with a fox. No. That's amazing.
It is amazing. That would not fly today.
Yes, it would.
Well, I don't know.
Yes,
I guess it would.
Yes, it would.
Not from a white guy.
Are you kidding me?
Well, because there's one point he says, look, I'm not your father. I'm not your brother. Talk to your sister. I am a lover. Perhaps the sister did not have as much knowledge as we found out later on that maybe the sister was not the one to ask about this particular topic.
Is he saying that he made it with his sister?
I think that's what he's trying to indicate there.
Okay.
Like, times change. They change.
Yeah, because that song is still mild compared to today. If you want to protect your home this holiday season, listen up. You now have early access to Simply Safe's biggest Black Friday sale ever. They are going to put on Black Friday, they're going to put their $200, or they're going to put their biggest system, their best system, their best-selling system off $200 markdown. Now, this is a true bestseller. It's their 13-piece arsenal that covers your entire home. If you want to protect your family, this is the easiest way to do it. They have made everything effortless. You just go online, you order, it's delivered to your door with free shipping. It takes a lot less than an hour to set up. A 10-year-old can do it. It has no long-term contract. You own the system. There's no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees. And the monthly monitoring is $15 a month. Now, that's best in industry, $15 a month. That's three times less. Don't miss the chance. Save now. Go to simplysafebeck.com right now. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
You know, I'm growing gravely concerned about the message we're sending our boys and how are we raising our boys. If you look at the lyrics, you know, from I Want Your Sex, George Michael, to the lyrics today, they are much worse today.
Much more graphic.
Much more graphic. And what message is it sending? Look at Cosmo. Look at what they're saying to girls and young women. And how do men navigate that? More tomorrow.
Glenn Beck. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Well, it seems as though Europe has the secret weapon against North Korea's threats. And I don't mean the continent. I mean the band. Europe. Don't remember that? Over the weekend, a brave soul hacked radio... How do you say the... Pyongyang.
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 There you go.
And played the Swedish rock band, Europe... Their 1986, The Final Countdown. They played it on loop. Now, needless to say, you know, 80s, you know, hair bands, not regular programming there in North Korea. The regime usually uses the station to broadcast coded messages ahead of their provocations. For example, North Korea made broadcasts on the station 2 days before conducting a nuclear test, 1 day before a ballistic missile test, and 1 day before they did the, you know, Japanese flyovers. So you can imagine it was probably quite a shock to hear Joey Tempest's vocals instead of a super serious coded message on how we're going to annihilate the United States. This heroic act comes on the heels of President Trump's meeting with Chinese leaders to reaffirm their stance against North Korea's attempts to attain nuclear weapons. Trump said all nations must come together to ensure that this rogue regime cannot threaten the world with its nuclear weapons. And in a world where we seem to be afraid of everything and we have reason to be afraid of North Korea's instability, it's kind of nice to sit back and just laugh at them for, I mean, a minute, you know, especially when it feels like every day we're dealing with Kim Jong-un, who's going to issue some decree and it will result in the final countdown, right? Yeah, it didn't work. It didn't work in North Korea. It doesn't work here.
It's Monday, November 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, I find myself really... I don't like what's happening in our world right now. And at the same time, I love what's happening in our world right now. We are entering a transparent world where there are no secrets. And... people who have power are being exposed. However, at the same time, we are giving over all of our power for any kind of anything. I mean, we're engaging in the beginnings of a witch hunt. And right now it feels good because you're taking down, you know, Harvey Weinstein and serial predators. And serial predators who have power, they absolutely need to be stopped. However, we're getting into places now like Louis C.K. where I'm disgusted by him. But he asked for permission and they strangely said yes. And I don't know if that's worth him never being able to make a movie again. I mean, it's kind of like Pee Wee Herman. I mean, and I don't want to shake your hand, you know, and I wouldn't want my daughters around you, but it's not the same as what Weinstein did. And how are you going to navigate if you're if you're a young man today, it's now being said that if you ask someone for a date, if you ask someone to go out, that can be construed as sexual harassment. Now, we've been talking about this for a while, and we thought we were alone, and then we read a very brave article in the LA Times. It's difficult to imagine a woman whose actions even come close to Weinstein's. Women, however, do engage in sexual harassment. A male friend of mine worked for a small magazine as a recent college graduate in the 80s and had less than fond memories of a female coworker, his senior in both age and position, who sometimes greeted him with jokes, insinuating that he was sexually aroused, and once groped him under the pretext of straightening out his posture in a motherly way. She says, you know, we are entering a world now. Dudes, are you aware how happy women would be if strangers and coworkers never flirted with us again? This is the world we want. This is a tweet from singer-songwriter. She writes, the author of this story writes, but is it? It's not the world I would want. Except in college, nearly every man I ever dated with was either a coworker or, once I switched entirely to freelancing, someone I met through work. This is not unusual, even in the age of dating website and apps. So we wanted to talk to her because I can't imagine that Kathy Young, I mean, I think she's saying common sense here, is where is the line? Where are we going too far, and when will we know we've gotten there? Kathy Young joins us now. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Glenn. It's very good to be here.
Thank you. So Kathy, A, how much heat are you getting for...
A certain amount of heat, you know, but I'm used to this. I've been writing about these issues actually since the 1990s, believe it or not, when we had another round of a somewhat similar conversation, you know, post Anita Hill, and I thought there was some overreach back then. So I'm sort of used to being called a traitor to my gender. At the same time, I have gotten a lot of positive feedback, not only from men, but from other women who have been saying that, you know, not only are they concerned about the demonization of men, but they're concerned about you know, women being painted as these perpetual victims. I had a conversation just last night with a friend of mine who works for a major television network, which I will not name, but she basically said, you know, I really don't like what's going on right now. I think that, you know, I'm tired of women in the name of feminism being made out to be victims all the time. And I think that that's a really pretty common reaction. So I think that there are more of us out there than anyone would suspect. And this is women of different ages. I think this is definitely a concern that is out there.
So, Kathy, how do we, where is the line? Where is there a line?
That is a really good question, because there are some really, really tough questions. For instance, I mean, I think that it is great on the one hand that, you know, we have a more supportive environment today than we did before for people, you know, not just women. Obviously, we have also seen some young men come forward with accusations, apparently credible accusations of sexual abuse by people in power. I think it's great that we have a more supportive climate where, you know, they can do that without having to worry about being vilified, about being sort of torn to shreds and having their reputation destroyed. On the other hand, you know, I sometimes see people say that, well, you know, there's really no motive for anyone to make a false claim of sexual abuse because there's really no, you know, no upside and no incentive. Well, actually, there is. You know, some people do thrive on attention. Some people do thrive on social support. There have been, you know, stories of people doing bizarre things like, you know, falsely claiming that they have cancer when they don't, because they have seen someone else in their social circle who has cancer, you know, getting a lot of support and love from everyone. So in a way, you know, ironically, the more social support and, you know, positive reinforcement you have for real victims to come forward, the more, unfortunately, you do sort of create the risk of people who may have a sort of narcissistic personality, who may be starved for attention, who may have other issues, coming forward with a claim, with false claims of sexual abuse. And I don't really know where to find the balance to, you know, I think that we have to, even as we support victims who come forward, we really cannot take the position that accusation per se equals guilt. I mean, obviously, I think there are circumstances where if you have corroborating evidence, if you have, you know, if this person has years ago told other people that this happened, certainly that's a pretty huge corroboration. But, you know, at the same time, I think that a certain degree of skepticism is nevertheless necessary in many cases. And I would really strongly caution against embracing this sort of accusation equals guilt mentality.
Yeah, that's the thing that kind of concerns me, because I think likely, Kathy, here we are at the beginning of this, and we've seen a lot of really big sort of, you know, people who have had multiple, you know, 10, 12, 15, 20,
right,
some
right.
and 200 allegations against them.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And so it feels like a difficult time to talk about this process, because it seems like you're shaming the victims or defending the indefensible. But the process here, which seems to be, and you point out one good example of it here with Roy Price from Amazon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It seems to be that just one person from your past makes one accusation of behavior that's not even illegal, or it's
right.
not even close to illegal in the Amazon
yeah.
case. There's not even
yeah.
an accusation
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, and you know what? The other thing that I found out actually after I wrote that piece, I looked a little more deeply into that case, and it turns out that at the time this happened, and by the way, what happened was that Roy Price, who was the head of Amazon, the Amazon Instant Video Division, and a female executive, were in a cab. This is at this event called Comic-Con, which is this, you know, really huge kind of, you know, TV fandom event. It's like a huge fan convention. It's a very, very freewheeling environment where, you know, alcohol flows very freely. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of people do actually go to those events to, you know, have sexual encounters. I mean, to either flirt or, you know, have a kind of no-strings romance on the road, both men and women. I mean, this really does happen. So he's in a cab with this female executive, and he's drunk. And he makes a really crude comment, sort of inviting her to have sex with him. And she rebuffs him, and he repeats something like, oh, he basically tells her that she would love having sex with him, except he puts it much more kind of crudely than that. And that's it. That's all that happens. You know, she doesn't suffer any kind of career repercussions, you know, for rebuffing him. Nothing. There's no physical contact. There's no sexual assault of any kind. But not only that, it turns out that back when this happened in 2015, she actually did go to Human Resources and complain about this. And they did. They didn't actually punish him, but they did sort of make sure that they worked in different divisions and didn't come into contact with each other, so that, you know, she would not be uncomfortable in, you know, her work interactions. And it seems to me that that's a perfectly acceptable way of resolving that. But apparently she felt that that wasn't enough. And on this wave of these post-Weinstein revelations, she went public about this. And this guy has basically, you know, lost his job. And at least for the time being, is probably not very likely to find another one.
So,
and, you know, I feel sympathy for this guy. I mean, I really think that he got hugely railroaded. Unless, of course, there's something else we don't know about. But, you know, this is at least on the basis of what we know, this really seems to be extremely trivial. And I will tell you something else. I will bet you that there are multiple women who have engaged in exactly the same behavior with coworkers
sure.
who are not getting penalized the same way. I mean, you know, I could tell you stories that I, you know, where I have personally heard, you know, female journalists talking about, you know, seducing male, you know, either colleagues or people that they work with, you know, in the field. It happens all the time. I mean, women do have agency. You know, women are not these,
shrinking flowers.
Lambs. And I mean, obviously, again, if we're talking about rape, sexual assault, obviously there is, you know, a physical difference between men and women where, you know, as I said in my piece, I think it is extremely difficult to imagine, you know, a woman doing the stuff that Weinstein was doing, because, you know, a lot of it does involve, you know, physically overpowering
yeah.
people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I mean, not to say that women never commit sexual assault, but, you know, I think those specific circumstances, yeah, I mean, I think that's predominantly or, you know, almost exclusively a kind of a male offense. And, of course, we do have a lot more men than women in positions of power in Hollywood, so I think that's also important to remember. But, you know, at the same time, I think it would really be a mistake, you know, in 2017, when I think something like currently, you know, 45% of management positions are held by women, and there are a lot of men. I forget the exact numbers, but approximately, I think possibly about a third of men either have or have recently had a female boss. I mean, you know, this is really, we're not in a world where women have no power in the workplace.
Yeah. Kathy, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And if you haven't read her article, it's in the LA Times. Thank you so much, Kathy. God bless.
We'll tweet it from Glenn Beck and at World of Stu. It's from the LA Times. Is Weinsteining getting out of hand? And one of the interesting parts she kind of brought up there was talking about how women are cast as these perpetual victims, to the point of, like, in Louis C.K. and some of the others, it's they agree to it because they feel that they can't say no. They don't leave because they feel that they can't say no. They don't report it because they feel that they can't. And they don't ever do anything about it because they feel like they might get repercussions. And it's kind of, it is casting women as these perpetual victims that if one of them had stood up at one point, especially with some of these bigger cases, who knows how many women would have been protected from future assaults.
Well, how does Louis C.K. know to change his behavior if he asks and you say yes?
Yeah.
I mean, how does he know to change his behavior, that's not appropriate? If somebody, instead of the two girls that said that this happened to them, they laughed all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, instead of laughing all the way through it, instead, when he starts to unzip after he's asked you, you go, oh, yeah, let's just say you're being sarcastic. Yeah, yeah, go ahead. As soon as he starts to unzip, you're like, Louie, no.
We're leaving.
No, we're leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a difference between a predator and a pig. There's a big difference. They both start mm-hmm. with P's, but one's a pig, one's a predator. One, one just needs to be told no. Others need to be ostracized or put in jail where they belong. When emergencies happen, our thoughts and prayers go to those affected. But we also start to think, you know, I hope this doesn't happen to me. That's why more Americans are starting to prepare again. They want control over their own life, and they see how fragile things really are. My Patriot Supply has helped me prepare for about 10 years now, and I depend on them for my food storage. It's really simple. It's really good food, easy to store. You can start with their 102 serving of food. It's 102 servings for $99. That's less than a dollar per serving. 800-271-63 is the number to call to order the kit, or you can go online at preparewithglenn.com. It's going to be shipped free to your home. It will include breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it will last up to 25 years. And when a crisis strikes your neighborhood, your family, you're not going to have to worry about it for you. You'll be taken care of. You'll be able to help others that haven't prepared. 800-271-63 or order online at preparewithglenn.com. Dependable emergency food storage. Preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. We have a great week of shows coming up. We have this week the former chairman of General Motors. It's going to be an interesting conversation. He says the end of the automobile is here. And General Motors, you have to remember, was a horse and buggy company. It was the Fisher Carriage Company. And they made these, you know, carriages that were drawn by horse and the suspension. And after the third attempt that Henry Ford made for the assembly line, and the third one worked, the guys at Fisher Carriage said, our days are numbered. We're going into automobiles. And that was General Motors. General Motors now, the chairman has left. He'll be on with us this week. And he says, it's over. Self-driving cars are not even going to be self-driving cars. And in 2030, it will be illegal for people to drive their own car. And he describes a world that is both exciting and a little frightening in some ways. And the loss of jobs alone, the turnover, I should say, in jobs alone, it's going to be incredible. He says GM won't be the one unless they get on the stick. It's really going to be coming from, you know, Apple and Google and people like that that will start to be building these pods.
Yeah, and the scariest thing about it is how believable it is. I mean, it really, it doesn't seem like it's super far off when you hear him describe it. Obviously, this is someone who really knows the industry.
And has no reason to, has no reason to warn. I mean, he's, you know, he's with General Motors.
Yeah.
And he has no reason to warn.
He describes how driving will stick around in only like an elitist sort of sport like equestrian is today, right? Yeah. Like you could do it. Like people still could do it on private land, kind of on their own. It's going to be kind of like a fun thing you might do on a vacation, but it's not going to be reality anymore. Very soon.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. That's coming up later this week.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
No. Hello and welcome to the program. We're just, Pat Gray is joining us from Pat Gray Unleashed.
Hi.
How you doing, Pat?
I'm good. You?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah? I'm sensing some of that.
Better than ever. Yeah. Better than ever. So, I miss you, Pat.
Right back at you.
No, see, look at this.
We're in the same building, though.
I know, but you know, you don't ever stop by. You don't say hello.
I'm doing my thing, and you're kind of doing yours.
Wow, it's just two ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were just talking about this George Takei thing, and I really don't like George Takei for all of his, you know, in the Federation of Planets, we have universal health care, and we don't have guns. Oh, shut up.
So liberal.
Yeah. No. So
progressive.
Crazy progressive.
Yeah.
And lives in the sci-fi world. I mean, you know, I don't know if you noticed this, George, but yeah, sure, phasers aren't guns, but you use them in every episode.
Yeah.
So I don't like him. But when he was accused by this one guy of something 30 years ago, and, you know, I immediately thought, unless there's a dog pile of a bunch of stories, how do we know this is true? And he came out and he said, I am so hurt by this. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a champion of people and against sexual harassment and all of this stuff. And I actually kind of bought into it. And I thought, okay, now is this a guy who's being wrongly accused?
Mm-hmm.
Then I heard him on Howard Stern. And when you hear, let's play this because I'd like to get Pat's commentary on this. Play the Howard Stern, George Takei.
The irony is we have a man in the White House who talked about grabbing... There is an irony about all of this, is there not, George?
Well, it's a repetition, you know, because...
All your years involved with... You never hassled anybody or grabbed their... Yeah. Did you ever grab anyone by the... their will?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Well, they were different times.
Or something.
You never sexually harassed any... have you?
Oh, my goodness.
I'll take that as a yes.
It's some people that are kind of skittish,
right?
Or maybe afraid, and you're trying to persuade. But you know,
do we need to call the police?
What are you saying, Howard?
What are you saying, George? In other words, they were taught, but you never held a job over someone if they didn't.
No, I never did that.
Oh,
no.
I see.
What did you? That's what this is all about. Situations, though,
It's not about sex. It's about power.
Right.
I see.
It's about power.
But you didn't do this grabbing at work.
Oh, no. It wasn't at work.
Oh, good.
It was either in my home.
Oh, okay.
They came to my home.
Well, that was an open invitation.
No, it's not an open invitation.
He's just trying to go where no man has gone before. At home. What's the problem with that?
So that's exactly what this guy accused him of. said, yeah, I was exactly. with him in a bar. He took me home. Then he slipped me. I said, no, I'm not interested. I'm not interested. He was a younger man. He said,
gave him a couple of drinks.
Gave him a couple of drinks. Something was in the drink. He said, I passed out. Next thing I knew, I woke up and my pants were around my ankles and George was all over me. And I said, no, 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 no.
And he said, relax.
Right.
And just relax. If this was
that sounds
a man with a woman saying, well, she was horrible. Just skittish and I was trying to persuade her. That does not fly.
No.
I mean, are no there different way. Standards for homosexuals? Or
no.
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I don't think
so. If my son at any age would come home and say, Dad, she just needed a little convincing.
Oh, my God.
What?
Good golly.
I would be beside myself.
Out of your mind.
No. You don't know. She said, no, she's not interested. You don't grab her. Mm-hmm. I mean, but Takai doesn't seem to notice the difference here. Oh, no, no, no. It wasn't a work situation. Well, wait.
That doesn't make it okay.
It doesn't make it okay. Well, I didn't rape her at work. Well, okay.
It wasn't about power.
It was.
So, if in his mind, if it's
just
about
sex, it's no
fine.
Big deal.
It's fine. Any guy could use that excuse with a woman. That it doesn't work that way. Of course, it's about sex. And it's about power. It's about a lot of things. And it's about being a pervert. Stop it. Stop it.
It's just about being a decent human
yeah,
being.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Just be a decent human being.
And I'm starting to get a little concerned, as I know you are, that there's going to be some dolphins caught up in this tuna net. There's going to be some people who have not done anything wrong.
Okay, so here's the latest on Judge Roy Moore. There's a new accusation out this morning.
Yeah, there's a press conference coming up later today with a new accuser who accuses Roy Moore of having sexual relations of some sort with her when she was a minor. Now, of course, this one comes with the added baggage of being represented by Gloria Allred, which in my mind, I sort of immediately dismiss anything that she does.
Anytime she's on the scene, you
think, just seems so political and fake.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like having Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
this is actually going to help Roy Moore with this accuser.
Yes.
If this accuser were real, let's just say, and they went to Gloria Allred, it actually like takes your credibility down by half because she's just so bad and has been for so long. But I mean, if one of these things comes out to be really, you know, there's real evidence of him having interactions like this with a minor, I mean, everybody in the audience would be like, all right, I don't want this guy representing me in the Senate. Obviously, you don't want someone representing you in the Senate who's molested children. You know, but again, when it comes to political power specifically, these things feel like they could easily just be attacks. I don't know. I mean, again, this one may very well not be. But look at the precedent you're setting for future, you know, instances of this. Look at what you're teaching people who are bad people, who are political activists, that if they come out 4 weeks before an election and make an accusation, everyone's going to believe them immediately. And you're going to be a horrible person if you ask any even the most minor question about
it. Well, look at this. Sean Hannity does an interview with Roy Moore, asks him tough questions.
Yes.
He doesn't just ask him nursery school questions. He did not give the treatment to Roy Moore that he would have given to Donald Trump.
But he's going with the other. He's trying to get the other side of it. You can't even get the other side of it.
Yeah. And I don't even think
you can't even get now. Advertisers are jumping ship because
media
got
matters,
the other side of
media
it.
Media Matters sent out a smear that said, now look, Sean Hannity is defending a pedophile.
Good God.
Well, that's not what he did.
No.
He did an interview with Roy Moore. Now, are
not
we
charged
really,
with any crime?
Are we at a point in America to where somebody can allege something and you can't even report the other side?
Well, yes.
I guess so.
Look at what Peter King said. He's a U.S. congressman, and he tweeted out, I would say unless he can prove his innocence, the burden is now on him within the next day or so. I believe he has to step down. Wait, the burden of proof is now on the accused? Is this now the Soviet Union? How did we get to this place where the burden of proof is not on the state or the accuser, it's on the accused? That's the opposite of the American system.
Yeah, it's true.
And despicable.
And the defense to that seems to be, well, this one feels like he really did it. It seems like it's convincing.
Yeah, that's not a good
thing.
That's not a thing at all.
Yeah.
Wait. But they've done a really good job. And I am not defending him. I'm not defending him.
Because I don't know if he did it or not.
I know. And I don't know. I think that there's a chance that it was. I believe the 18, 17, and 16-year-old dating thing. I think that's clear that he did that.
He seems to almost admit that.
Yeah, so it's clear.
Yeah.
On the 14-year-old, I don't know, but look what they've done. They took three credible witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Three that, you know, he can't really deny, and he doesn't deny. And then they lumped, and those were all... Pretty much he was a gentleman. He talked to mom and dad or talked to the moms, got permission,
went out,
and they only kissed. Okay.
Right.
So it's creepy. It's weird. It's deliverance, but it's not illegal. And he seems to be a gentleman. Then they put a 14-year-old next to that. If it was just the 14-year-old, it would have to rise to its own merit. But because you have these other three
that lend credibility,
it makes you go, yep, there's a pattern. This one fits. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't fit, it just shows this pattern and it gives it credibility. So if they've got three out of the four correct, it's important which one they have incorrect.
Yeah, no, it's true. And to me, the whole story is the 14-year-old.
Yes.
It really is the only one that is relevant, I think, at this point.
Well, no.
And how do you prove that either way?
No, wait.
You can't.
It is relevant to know that a guy, when he was in his 30s, thought it was appropriate in Alabama in the 70s to date a 16-year-old and not have a problem with it.
Yeah,
and still doesn't really have a problem with it as long as he talked to mom.
I don't know that it's all that relevant, honestly. And if he's in his 70s, you know, he's had 40 years where there's been no other reporting on this.
How is he going to be on pornography and sex slaves and things that are being seen.
But you've got 40 years of
he's super
of
religious.
A record.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, I can.
Super religious.
Super religious.
Look, there's 40 years of his
he'll
record
strong
on the issues.
He is super legalistic. That's what he is.
That's what makes this so creepy because everybody knows he's such a biblically based guy. He defended the Ten Commandments monuments and won.
Right.
And so now you're accusing him of these improprieties. And so it not only taints him, but what they're trying to do is taint all Christians. That's what they want to do. They want to make us all to be hypocrites.
You're in Alabama. You vote for him or not?
Yeah, because unless it's proven that he did something illegal and improper with a 14-year-old, I think so.
Yeah, I don't think I think so. I mean, I like Mo Brooks, so I
well, yeah, I would have voted for Brooks in the first place.
Right, exactly.
But now that that's not an option, I'd vote for him.
I mean, it's interesting because there's things on either side of this. I think he has a fair point in that I've been a publicly divisive figure for 40 years in the state and run multiple statewide campaigns.
And it hasn't come out until now.
Never come out, which I think that is actually a fair point. I think there's another fair point in a nuanced, bizarre way. What you described as being a quote-unquote gentleman, which I know is not exactly what you mean, but it's like, okay, he kissed them. He asked parents' permission to take out the
17-year-olds. Took them home when they asked,
right? Exactly. When they decided they didn't want anything, he took them home. And in a way, it would be odd behavior to, when they are legal, 16, 17, 18, to go only as far as kissing, as they all describe.
Yes.
And then when you cross the line to 14-year-olds, that's the time you get more sexually active.
Yeah, that
it's a very strange thing. However, on the other side of that,
because he's so legalistic,
it
doesn't ring true.
Right.
That 14-year-old, the 16 absolutely rings true. The 14 doesn't.
Right.
But however, there is evidence that she, before he was running for the Senate seat, she had told multiple other people that this had happened when she wasn't promoting it. Breitbart went down there, they sent reporters down to kind of go after her story a little bit. And one of the things they found was, and they tried to present this as a point in their favor,
which was the Washington Post basically hounded this woman to tell the story. She didn't want to tell it. They kept hounding her and hounding her and hounding her. At some level, I think that actually, adds to her credibility.
It does.
Like, you're trying to make the Post look bad, which is true. But if she's resisting telling the story, it takes away her motivation for lying.
And I will tell you this. The reason why, you know, you're not hearing these stories about a 16, 17-year-old dating in the 70s is because I will bet you that there's a lot of people in the state that wouldn't have a problem with that. Back then, it was a different world. In the South, it just was. It was a different world. And it rings true. The 14-year-old I'm out on. But the 16, 17, 18 all rings true to me. Do you have somebody in your life who is obsessed with fall? Or just really, really loves fall. The pumpkin spice, the cinnamon. Perfect. You don't know, you just know somebody like that?
Yeah, it's just every food currently in my house has a pumpkin spice flavor to it. every scent, yeah. Candles and around every corner, air fresheners and cars. Yeah. It's pumpkin life.
Pro Flowers has the perfect gift for the lover of fall. Long-lasting bouquet in their favorite fall colors. Their best-selling cinnamon cider roses, a great option for birthday, anniversary, or for coming up on Thanksgiving next week. Or you can go with one of the classics like the 100 Autumn Blooms or a dozen Autumn Roses. You can't lose because no matter which bouquet you send, you'll receive 20% off any ProFlowers unique bouquet of $29 or more. ProFlowers bouquets guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. So order now. If you're not going to be able to be at your parents or your in-laws' table, make sure you send something now. Get 20% off of the bouquets, $29 or more, at proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. It's proflowers.com, promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So glad that you tuned in today. Thank you so much for that. I cannot believe how fast time is flying. Next week is Thanksgiving. Before you know it, Christmas is going to be upon us. I mean, it is just crazy how fast things are going.
Yeah, I'm trying to, the last few months, been spending time trying to, like, get my body used to eating all this food. So I've been slowly increasing the amount I eat every day. To try to get ready for Thanksgiving.
I'm not sure I'm ready.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm going to continue to punish my body all week.
I know. So thank you for that update.
Think people want to learn how to do things the right way.
I know. That's good. Tonight on television, we are going to take a look for the whole week. We are doing a chalkboard series on Antifa. What is it? This is something that you really need to watch with your kids. Because it sounds noble to be against fascism, right? I mean, I don't want to be for... who is for fascism? I mean, besides fascists, who's for fascism? It's bad. So we should fight it, right? What the truth is on Antifa all this week. Don't miss it. The Blaze TV.
Glenn Beck.